We move to the final case this morning, Welton v. Anderson.
This afternoon. This afternoon, it's not this morning.
I see that.
May it please the court, your honors. My name is Hamid Kashani. I represent Mr. Welton, who is the plaintiff appellant here. The complaint alleges that Detective Anderson intentionally and maliciously filed false charges and caused criminal prosecution to be brought against Mr. Welton. As a result, Mr. Welton was arrested and prosecuted. After a trial, the court found him not guilty on all counts. As a result of the fabricated charges and the criminal proceeding, Mr. Welton was incarcerated, though briefly, sustained economic loss for defending himself, damages to his reputation and good name, and in the words of Judge Posner, he was in limbo for almost nearly 4 years, facing possibility of long-term incarceration. The district court dismissed the case for failure to state a claim. It held that lack of probable cause alone is not sufficient for a malicious prosecution claim. And that is exactly what Detective Anderson argues in her brief here. However, the complaint alleges all four elements of malicious prosecution and far more facts than just lack of probable cause. But both the district court and the defendants here completely ignore that. The district court also reasoned, and Detective Anderson argues here, that because Mr. Welton was exonerated, he may not pursue a claim of malicious prosecution. That ignores the fact that this case is about Detective Anderson's conduct and the damages that he has caused. That also presents a catch-22, because if the criminal defendants are barred from bringing malicious prosecution just because they were exonerated, then nobody can bring malicious prosecution claims, because exoneration is an element of malicious prosecution. This is essentially our case. I think most of the facts and arguments, most of the facts that we had in our brief and most of the arguments we had in response to the motion to dismiss were ignored, and everybody focused on a little part and said, well, okay, you say there was no probable cause, and the probable cause is not enough. And they left everything else out. And I really don't have anything more to say. I think I summed up what we had in our argument.
Isn't there something unique in Indiana law about police officers?
That was pretty much decided in the long time ago, if I can go back, where Judge Kaney decided Easterhouse, when specifically Judge Kaney held that to have a claim under the due process clause, the relief afforded by the state law should be meaningless or non-existent. If that is meaningless or non-existent, therefore you can pursue the claim under the due process clause. And for a long time, the district judges in Indiana were holding that even though Indiana says that there is malicious prosecution claim, and even though Indiana courts hold that police officers are totally immune from malicious prosecution claim, the plaintiffs in federal cases cannot pursue malicious prosecution claim against law enforcement officers in Indiana because the claim exists on the books, even though Indiana doesn't allow it, even though Indiana immunizes the police officers.
That's different than Illinois.
Pardon?
Illinois, you can have that prosecution.
Illinois, you can have it.
And so that's what sort of bothers me about this, is that if you cannot have a state action for malicious prosecution, which you can't, cannot, as I understand it, whether it's negligent or intentional. Is that right?
Intentional.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're alleging intention.
Right.
And that's where I'm, I'll let the other side tell me what, why not, but I expected that to be your argument.
Indiana has it on the books, but yeah, immunizes the police officers.
I know, which means there's no remedy under Indiana law.
Exactly.
So the question is there, would there then that case be a remedy in federal court for intentional, as you allege?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's Pratt versus Taylor, and as recently as Julian and versus Hanna, decided by Jess Posner on October 21, 2013, but the case goes back, way back to Pratt versus Taylor, and also goes to the time where Judge Kaney decided the case of Easterhouse. He said the relief provided by a state has to be meaningful. So Indiana has the relief, but you cannot get it. So that's meaningless and non-existent relief. Therefore,
I misunderstood. Indiana has the relief, but you can't get it.
Right, which is that makes it non-existent and meaningful, not meaningless.
So
in the words of Judge King.
All right.
I'm just quoting. Well, he has meaningless and non-existent.
You've got it more in mind than I do. I have to say that.
All right. Well.
I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Sanders?
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. I would like to just get started very briefly with your concerns, Your Honor, regarding malicious prosecution being on the books in Indiana, excuse me, but there is a complete law enforcement immunity. This court has recently held in the Julian decision in Sereno that because that immunity is there, that remedy under state law is useless. And accordingly, now a plaintiff may bring a Section 1983 claim for malicious prosecution in Indiana, whereas in the past that wasn't the case. And I will briefly, before we get started into my argument.
Briefly before we get started, don't I understand that the trial judge in this case dismissed it because there was a remedy in the Indiana law for malicious prosecution?
Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree. And the
That's not what he said?
No, Your Honor. It was filed as a Rule 12b-1 for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. There's a 1983 claim against Officer Anderson,
right,
and there's two state law malicious prosecution claims and other claims against the National Bank of Indianapolis and its vice president, Mr. Keeley. However, as this case went on, Julian and Sereno had not come out yet, and I have the dates here. But the joint motion to dismiss was on July 19, 2013. That's when it was filed. As grounds, it was the fact that our motion was based on the fact that there is a remedy at state law, even though there's a complete immunity.
Even though there's what?
Even though there's a law enforcement immunity for Officer Anderson from malicious prosecution. The district court came out prior to the Julian motion. The district court entered its order on September 19, 2013, and then the law changed. Julian came out October 21st, 2013. But the district court looked at this case. It didn't have the benefit of Julian. However, it looked at it and said, we don't need to get into whether or not Indiana recognizes a claim for malicious prosecution, because under the dictates of Tully and the other case law, which the appellees cite, there is no right to be prosecuted without probable cause.
Or not to be prosecuted
without probable cause. Which leads me to my main argument, is that the district court correctly dismissed Welton's amended complaint, because even when read in a light most favorable to Welton, and with all non-conclusory allegations taken as true, Welton's amended complaint does not state a malicious prosecution claim. Rather, it may state a claim for false arrest, but Welton didn't elect to pursue it. Welton, in his amended complaint, starting at paragraph 30, subsections A through H, lists numerous instances where Detective Anderson, Officer Anderson, allegedly provided false facts. But if you look at the beginning of section 30, that was in her probable cause affidavit and the charging information. In that instance, that would have attached prior to the arraignment, which would have been a Fourth Amendment false arrest claim. 14th Amendment for malicious prosecution doesn't attach until the criminal defendant is bound over and subject to legal proceedings. The district court correctly determined that Welton's malicious prosecution claim fails as a matter of law, as his amended complaint does not allege that he was deprived of a specific constitutional right, such as the right to a fair and impartial trial. This court has consistently held that a plaintiff does not have the right to not be prosecuted without probable cause, absent alleging such a specific deprivation. This court has also unambiguously held that malicious prosecution claims under the Fourth Amendment are not cognizable as a matter of law. Federal courts are rarely the appropriate forum for malicious prosecution claims, and as the district court correctly noted, a plaintiff may not state a Section 1983 claim simply by alleging that he was maliciously prosecuted. Instead, he must allege that he was deprived of one of his constitutional rights, such as the right to a fair trial. In this case, Welton's amended complaint only alleges that Anderson provided false testimony, but in looking at her amended complaint, that deals with the probable cause affidavit, which would have gone to secure Welton's arrest. And in addition to that, Welton alleges in his amended complaint that if she learned of the falsity of those statements, that she failed to make such a correction. These allegations, however, are not malicious prosecution claims because they occurred pre-arraignment. Specifically, Welton alleges in paragraph 36 that there was no probable cause for prosecuting Welton, but as this court has held, there must be more than the allegation that he was prosecuted without probable cause. Paragraph 36 is the only instance other than paragraph 35 which shows a post-arraignment allegation. Everything else in Welton's amended complaint occurred pre-arraignment, which would have brought a Fourth Amendment claim for false arrest, which wasn't pursued.
So what I guess you're saying is that once there was arraignment, there was never any question about the manufactured false evidence of Officer Anderson?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think it's been alleged that that the evidence was manufactured. There are cases.
I mean, I'm not saying anything about whether it's true or not. I'm only saying that if there's an allegation that they fabricated evidence or something that would be totally wrong, illegal, and it's not based on Fourth Amendment, it's based on the 14th Amendment. And I don't really know all the details. They're not arguing it anyway, so I'm not sure where we are.
I would suggest, Your Honor, that if the information was false and it was provided in a probable cause affidavit to secure the arrest, that leads to a claim of false arrest, which ends, as this court has consistently held, at the time the defendant is bound over. From the time the defendant is bound over up and through trial, that brings the 14th Amendment due process, which is now the malicious prosecution claim, which a plaintiff could bring. But there has to be more than the fact that I was prosecuted without probable cause. In the recent court case with Julian in this court, there was an allegation that the detectives fabricated evidence and that they presented this evidence to witnesses who later testified against Julian, causing his imprisonment. In this matter, that's not the case before the court today.
So there wasn't any false, fabricated, or whatever evidence presented after arraignment.
Well, Your Honor, there's no allegation that Detective Anderson, that Officer Anderson, testified at trial in this complaint. Now, if the court were to read that in, that she did testify at Mr. Welton's trial, there's a difference between perjured testimony and fabricated testimony. In this instance, the testimony could not have been fabricated because in counts 2 and 3 of Welton's amended complaint, he alleges that the National Bank of Indianapolis, through its vice president, Mr. Keeley, provided that information to Anderson, which was the basis of her investigation. But looking at that, this court has held several times, and I think the most important case and the most recent case is a U.S. Supreme Court case from 2012 that perjured testimony, testimony that's provided at trial, there's an absolute immunity as to any claim that occurs from that witness's testimony. And the court says, the U.S. Supreme Court, and this is Briscoe v. LaHue, in a case under 42 U.S.C. 1983, a trial witness has absolute immunity with respect to any claim based on the witness's testimony. When a witness is sued because of his testimony, the claims of the individual must yield to the dictates of public policy. Without absolute immunity for witnesses, the truth-seeking process would be impaired. And it's neither context is the deterrent of potential civil liability needed to prevent perjurious testimony. The possibility of, rather, there's other sanctions available, chiefly the prosecution for perjury, which Officer Anderson, being a detective, would understand the gravity of had she submitted perjury testimony. But
how did this go? This went from she prepared an affidavit, presented it to who?
To the prosecutor, Your Honor.
Oh, that's what I assumed. Okay, so the prosecutor then took that and then got, was it an indictment or by information?
You know, Your Honor, to be honest with you, I'm not sure. Obviously,
you don't know if he took it to the grand jury or not.
I do not know. But I do know that he was brought in and he was released on his own recognizance once he was processed through.
Well, and then it would be either way, depending on. But there's some insulation there. It's really not relevant here, I guess, whether he went through the prosecutor or the grand jury. But you don't know.
But if that had occurred, Mr. Welton could have brought a claim for false arrest, which for whatever reason he elected not to. And this court has held that you can't combine the elements of a false arrest claim into a malicious prosecution claim to avoid the statute of limitations.
So you're saying by a different statute or whatever, he could have done something besides malicious prosecution?
I see my time's up, Your Honor. May I answer?
Yes.
Had the allegations been false, which is what Welton's amended complaint alleges in 30A through H, had those allegations been false in the probable cause affidavit and that secured his arrest, that leads to a false arrest claim, which is ripe immediately. He could have brought that. However, because he didn't bring that, he doesn't later get to come in and say, because I was found not guilty, that it must have been malicious prosecution.
I suppose it, obviously, it's a woman, it's an Anderson. Police officer Anderson, is that a woman?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, if she had testified and said the same things that he said was fabricated, that would be different.
I think that if there was an allegation that Officer Anderson fabricated evidence and created false evidence, I think that would lead to a malicious prosecution claim. Because this court has held you do have a constitutional right to be free from fabricated evidence. But in Rayburg, the Supreme Court held that you have an absolute immunity for your trial testimony, for even if it's alleged to be perjurious.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. How much time? You have 3 minutes, Counsel.
There was an information, no indictment.
What's the information?
And that's alleging the complaint, too. The complaint in paragraph 30 through 41 on page A17 through A19 details all acts of intentional malicious fabrication of evidence by the officer. Defendants have to accept that at this stage, but they still insist that accepting that, they should go scot-free. Mr. Sanders noted that, said that the bank had provided the information to the officer and that's how the officer got there. That is, of course, not in the record right now. I also have discovery and expert opinion showing the officer falsified, but we cannot bring those. We are stuck with the record before the court. All circuits who have addressed the issue of fabrication of evidence. Since 1935 decision of the Supreme Court in Mooney versus Houlihan, have decided that doing the presentation of fabricated evidence is actionable under the due process. And actually, there is a decision by Judge Mannion in 2003 in McCann, which talks about the availability of malicious prosecution for that kind of conduct. And it is true that officer or Detective Anderson, had she testified in court, she would have enjoyed witness immunity, but she would not have enjoyed immunity for manufacturing evidence. So I think a big number of cases, including Julian, this detail and list all a string of cases on the issue. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement, and the court stands in recess.